This is the Alien UFO Podcast, episode 172, and I'm your host, Simon Bowne. And you can enjoy the extended version of this episode ad-free on Patreon. This week, I'm talking to G.O. Turner about his book, UFO Science, Crop Circle Casework. Gary has also published a book, UFO Science, Secret New Physics, Vehicles and UAP. He has studied the UFO phenomenon for years, and he also writes a fiction series called Ruin. Hi, Gary. Thanks for coming back to the podcast.
Hey, Simon. Thanks for having me back again.
So we're going to talk about your books called UFO Science, Crop Circle Casework. Why did you decide to write a book about crop circles?
My first book was on the theoretical physics, where I reached out to different physicists around the world, and I studied their papers and documents and did my best Neil deGrasse Tyson interpretation so that I could take their heady quantum mechanics and what have you and boil it down so that, you know, people can chat about it over at a Starbucks or something like that. But because it was so theoretical, I honestly, no one invited me into Area 51. I didn't get to touch any UAP myself. And the great part about crop circles is it's physically present. You can pick up a stalk of wheat and see it for yourself. Plus, it gave me an excuse to visit your lovely country.
Have crop circles been around a long time? Because it seems like a recent thing.
It's really caught on. It took off in the 80s, really. But there has been plenty of documented cases going back as far back as the 1600s. The most famous one was the Mowing Devil of 1678. And that one's been documented in like woodcuts and what have you in the old articles back in the day, where a landowner back then, you would basically hire someone to come in as a freelancer to harvest your field. And that person would come in with a scythe and they would just start cutting everything down by hand. Talk about hard labor. Well, when someone approached this particular landowner and offered him a price, the guy piped up and said, "I'm not going to pay that price. For all I care, the devil can mow that field." And that night there was some wild fireworks over his crop circle over his crops that he basically hunkered down for the night. And when he went back out there, he found that perfect circle had been cut into his field. And evidently the stalks had been bundled up and set out in such a way that he was saying, only the devil could have done such a thing.
It's interesting. There were lights there. There was it 1686, the Oxford University professor? Was it Robert Plot who looked at 50 sites?
Yes. So, yeah, that's like one of the earliest cases of scientists or professors going out and developing they were starting from the ground up, literally.
Do you find that crop circles are all over the world? Because there's this thing where people think, well, it's all in South England and maybe there's one or two elsewhere.
Just like with my physics book, I wanted to create a guidebook so that everyone could, digest. And it's an illustrated guidebook where I break down the science into visual graphics and what have you. And some of the things I do have in there is like a world map where it's showing the breakdown of all the different places around the world, at least since 1995, where it's an interesting chart to examine to see all the different countries. And the most notable point is that nearly half of all crop circles occur in the UK.
Do you think that's because there are people making them here a lot more than anywhere else in the world?
I'll defer to one of the respected men in this field, if you'll forgive. There's lots of puns with crop circles.
Yeah.
Colin Andrews would like to tout that something like 80% of all crop circles are likely man-made, and the other 20% he attributes to a higher power. I take a more conservative route, and even if we lower that percentage to like even 10%, out of all of the crop circles that have been recorded in databases, that would still leave like 700 potentially NHI crop circles over the course of history.
Yeah, NHI is just non-human intelligence.
Yes, non-human intelligence. And just like with, if you go and you examine a lot of case history of UFO phenomena, the vast majority of that information can usually be attributed to very, very common sources, you know, misidentified aircraft, aerial atmospheric phenomena, misunderstanding of a planet. The thing is though, while Project Blue Book and other government agencies like that like to focus on those, explainable cases, it's the other 10% of cases that is the ones that we're really interested in.
Would it be obvious if you went into a crop circle, you could say, oh, that's man-made, and you went into another, oh, that's definitely not man-made? Would you really have to do a lot of research and check the crops for certain things?
So I did go in looking for some definitive evidence that would determine one way or the other. When I first approached this subject, I looked at all these different photographs and I thought, with my own bias, well, there's no way humans could potentially do all those things. I'm going to jump in and I'm going to, break this down and figure out the data and source it for myself. The more research I did, the more I realized there was much to be learned. And it was quite eye-opening what I came across as I dug in deeper, just at our own human capabilities. So as for a way to delineate between man-made and NHI potentials, there are a few possibilities, but actually nothing has been definitively locked in just yet.
And so you do say in the book that there's been a decline in crop circles showing up since 1996. I suppose that, mm-hmm. that might be just because the human crop circle makers, they might have done it in their early 20s and now they're just bored of it and they've got other things to do.
Yeah, there was definitely a wild craze period from the 90s through the 2000s, and it's been steadily drawing down since. And actually, last year was probably one of the lowest, like only maybe 40 crop circles made around the world or so. And of course, those were mainly done in the UK. It's still like what is created. We're all interested in those potential non-terrestrial creations, but even the human-made ones are incredibly awe-inspiring what they can achieve.
Yeah, I was thinking that. I was looking at the pictures in your book, and they do look amazing. And I wonder if making them is a lot easier than people would guess. It's like sometimes you see a magic trick that you think's amazing, and then when you find out how it's done, you think, what, is that it? It's a lot simpler than I thought.
Yeah, there's a lot of analogy between some magic tricks and what these crop circle artists can achieve. They have different little tricks that they like to share amongst themselves. And so my other inspiration for writing is creating novels. I like writing fiction and creating characters from whole cloth. And what I find so energizing for me as the author is when I hear back from people who've read the stories and they bring in their own psychological influence over the characters that I've written. And then I hear it from their new perspective. Well, these crop circle artists, that's what they're doing as well. They get a thrill out of building one of these enormous works of art. And then they come back the next day and they listen to everyone quietly as they all, try and put the puzzle pieces together in their mind. And they're just utterly fascinated by what they hear.
Did you talk to the human crop circle makers?
I have spoken with some of the circle makers there in England that would rather I didn't name names.
Did any of them say that while they were making crop circles, or maybe apart from that, that anything weird ever happened, perhaps paranormal, or they had a UFO sighting while they were doing it or anything?
That was one of the questions I had that I was eager to ask, because as you can imagine, if you're out in the middle of the night and it's dark and you're hiding, you don't have any lights on you, and you're trying to stay hidden while you're doing your work, and you're trying to imitate something that might not be human made, at least in origins or inspired by, you might draw attention from someone else, some non-terrestrial entity that would be like, what are these humans down here doing? And so, yeah, there was some occasions I did hear some stories from different figures in the field. And one occasion, a group of guys were out and they saw a orb of light just appear out of a field several fields over. And it rose up like 40 feet in the air and held there for a little bit before descending and disappearing back into the crops. On another occasion, famous circle maker John Lundberg was working in one field when this giant column of light shone down on an adjacent field several hundred yards away. And at first they thought they were caught, that some helicopter was flying in and about to spot them, and they all ducked down in the field. But this was a beam of light coming from a source that they couldn't spot high up in the air. And the column of light was like an intense beam that shone across that field before cutting out. And then they weren't the only witnesses, though. Over the next couple of days, some of the neighbors reported that same thing happening.
Yeah, it's interesting. I heard that the human circle maker had a dream about a certain shape, and they worked it out on the paper, and they went out to make that crop circle. And there was another team close by who were making exactly the same shape, and neither of these teams had talked to each other about what they were making.
Oh, awesome. Yeah, actually, Colin Andrews, he also, it was towards the end of one of these harvest seasons, and Colin Andrews, after researching it for years and getting a bit frustrated, laid in bed one night and, you know, basically called out to the heavens, if you're really out there and you're not one of us humans, go ahead and make a Celtic circle right here next to my home so that I know that you're listening. And the next morning he woke up to a phone call, and it just so happened the crop that was closest to his home that hadn't been harvested yet had a Celtic crop circle in it.
Wow. And Colin Andrews was an investigator, wasn't he? But did he start out as a skeptic, but over time he changed his viewpoint?
I don't know what really inspired him and brought him in, but he's definitely like the figurehead in the field, participating in several documentaries, working as a consultant. He was actually approached by Touchstone Pictures as a consultant for their movie Signs. And there was also the operation, I think it was Blackbird it was called, that he participated with the BBC and Japanese news programs. So he's been all throughout the history of crop circles since the 80s.
I wanted to ask you about the Oliver Castle video. And first of all, what does it show?
So the Oliver Castle video, that was an interesting one. A lot of people theorize that when the NHI do create one of these circles, it's when one of these plasma balls of light will fly in over a field and irradiate it with some kind of energy, causing the crops to fall over in a particular pattern. But no one had ever captured that on video at any point until back in 1996, when a guy came into a tavern over there with a VHS tape from his camcorder where he said he happened to be camping out in a field that previous night, and he recorded these three balls of light come over, and right there on camera, they generated this snowflake crop circle. And it became a big brouhaha, and it has shown up in many crop circle documentaries as like the only kind of video evidence of balls of light generating a crop circle. And it was also touted that this was something that couldn't be faked because it was a handheld camera that was, you know, tracking this crop circle formation. And at the time, the special effects industry just couldn't achieve something like that in such a rudimentary form of video. However, things started to take a wild turn when people started investigating more deeply a year later. And they did discover a studio in Bristol, I believe, that was relatively close, within a few hours' drive. And they tracked down a particular guy, John Wabe, who worked in that studio and also had a similar resemblance to the man that came into the tavern. So they tracked him down, the news program tracked him down, and eventually he confessed that, yeah, he had his hand in manufacturing this video. And so then he went on to get interviewed by National Geographic, where he recreated how he generated this video. But then, you know, case closed. Everyone thinks, all right, it was a hoax. This guy pulled one over on everyone. But then later on, another individual came along and started investigating his claims. And he attempted to recreate what John Wabe said that he could do. And it turned out that his story didn't quite hold up because John was saying that he filmed this. It's a bit complicated, but basically it's been theorized that what he did was he filmed it with a Digi Betamax camera, which I know a little bit about since I've been in television production for over 20 years now. And that he had his camera set up on a tripod on that hill where he recorded a wide flat plate, which he could then bring back to a studio, add in the balls of light and superimpose in the crop circle as a wipe, a masking wipe. And then it would, the hypothesis is he projected it onto a screen, this higher quality video, and then standing in front of the screen with a regular VHS camcorder brought in the handheld portion of it. But when a Dutch crop circle researcher attempted to go back to the exact same field and recreate his results, he found out that you couldn't possibly achieve it the way that John Wabe had described, because the tripod was nowhere, it would elevate it too high from the ground in order to capture it. The only way one could have possibly achieved that flat plate was by having the camera only like an inch or two above the ground or actually being handheld. So I wasn't able to recreate those results myself while I was there because I didn't learn about that until after I had returned back to my home. But it does raise a lot of questions about misinformation and how flooded the crop circle phenomena is with misinformation, disinformation, and just all sorts of red herrings.
So what do you feel about that video? Is it kind of a gray area and you're not sure, or are you pretty sure one way or the other?
I can't definitively lean one way or the other. If I next time back in England, I'll try to recreate it myself and then I'll have my own answer. I do know there are different techniques for taking a camera and putting it really low to the ground and leveling it out. It's really, you can bang your head against the wall trying to suss out all, you know, to sift through so much disinformation. Because if you really think about it, if 80 to 90% of all crop circles are man-made, you're going to already be at a handicap to try and distinguish. So you really got to nail down and dismiss as much vagaries as you can.
So can you tell us about the BLT research team studies?
That was interesting. Biophysicist Lefty Levengood was basically the head science figure for the BLT research group. And he was living in the States, and he saw some documentaries, and he thought, well, you know what? Why don't I just gather some of these prop samples, and I'll do a scientific, you know, blind study. And he did a whole series of studies where he had samples sent to him from all around the world. And he began to notice a correlation between how some of these crops had different kind of effects that were on the apical nodes of certain stems. And he began to theorize, well, maybe microwave radiation could cause this kind of damage, and that wouldn't be something that would occur with a rope and board. So he actually took some control samples of wheat and what have you, and he placed them in a regular home microwave oven, turned it on for 30 seconds, and it recreated the exact same effects. So the interesting aspect of it was, along the wheat stem, you know, about midway up or so, these nodes are still very much in a growth phase where they have more give and stretch to them. So the microwave energy basically heats up the water inside the stem, causing it to expand and stretch upwards or lean over to one side. While towards the base of the stalk, the nodes have hardened with more of like a barky outside. And those sections, the water heats up and they will blow similar to like a popcorn kernel.
So that's something that wouldn't happen with the human circle makers. They're not out there with microwave machines.
Right. And there was people have tried to emulate this effect. Like MIT created they attempted their own experiment where they could try to recreate the effects that BLT research was saying this is how you distinguish between a man-made and non-man-made crop circle. And they created this documentary, which turned out to be a bit of a farce on many levels. So they assembled this microwave emitter that began to malfunction. And during that malfunction, it actually took down some of the camera equipment and audio recorders as their batteries got drained down, which was a fascinating aspect of it, that we've seen incidental cases of this happening around some crop circles. And then the other thing was, by the close of their documentary, they were supposed to use these techniques in order to create a crop circle, and they didn't actually end up doing any of that. They ended up using a rope and board method to create their crop circle, and they showed no evidence of their microwave emitter actually being able to achieve what it was supposed to do.
Wasn't there something about very small magnetized iron spherules that were recovered?
Yeah, BLT research group collected samples where they saw a distribution of small magnetized spherules that were quite small. You would need a magnifying glass in order to see them. And they actually touted the MIT group to recreate this effect as well. And what they ended up doing was taking metal shavings and running it through a hoop of flame, which, of course, wouldn't melt it at all, and it would just basically heat it up for a split second, and then you would get shavings all over the field. But there was some controversy with, how did these magnetic spheres appear in the field to begin with? There was also some crystalline structures found in the clay in some areas, and it just didn't seem to add up. Because in order for some of these things to appear in the field, you would need to generate high temperatures in order to have these crystalline or magnetized molten spheres to appear. And of course, we all know that would burn down the field. So that one was kind of a very inconclusive thing where we couldn't find any logical explanation for it.
And were these spherules only found inside circles?
Yes. So, and their distribution would be in, how do I say this? It was kind of like a clock hand where they would be distributed linearly in different like radial phases from the center, with more of the spherules appearing in the center and less towards the extremities.
And I suppose they took control samples from outside the circles and saw there was no spherules in those samples.
Right.
Have other labs confirmed their results?
So they did do some studies where they actually gave samples to other scientists, and they didn't tell them what they were actually studying. They didn't tell them that it was for a crop circle. They just wanted to say, study these crop samples and tell me if you find anything anomalous in these blind case studies. And it backed up a lot of what Lefty was, you know, it was reinforcing his statements in early theories. However, I will add that I also spoke to some other science figures that were, that they had more of a alternative explanation for a lot of those things. And there was some shade thrown on the BLT research group, which I can understand where that was coming from.
So have there been times where there have been sightings of UFOs and then the next day or two there's a crop circle found?
Well, I didn't really spend too much time on anecdotal stories about crop circles. I was more interested in the data points. So basically, for me, I wanted to actually study the circles themselves and see what could come of it.
Now, there have been some famous, you probably can't call them circles anymore, like they used the crop to make a picture of an alien face, and one of them had a message in it encoded in a circle. But they were all human-made, weren't they?
So that was one of the, so there were so many different crop circles that drew me into wanting to do it. There was this ginormous 409 galaxy-shaped circle that was like, whoa, that was done in one night, 409 giant circles. And some of these other circles also just got my attention. There was what was called the Arecibo reply. And right next to the Arecibo reply was a human face that was flattened into a crop field. And the method that it was used to create the subtle gradations of the face was what's called a halftone print pattern that you would see in a newspaper printing. So basically, in black and white newsprint, it only runs with black ink. And the only way you can get the gradation or graying shades is by creating these little dot patterns of varying sizes, which this crop had used that technique to create a face. And then like in the following year, right after that, we got the most like ominous looking crop circle, which was the appearance of a gray or one of these, what you would call a gray NHI, holding a disc with a digital code written onto the disc, which could be broken down. It turned out to be a computer ASCII code. Now, again, Colin Andrews was called in and they asked, you know, what do you think about these crop circles? They're just like so phenomenal. Well, he had already been given a tip, because someone had already approached him to be a consultant for a promotion that was coming out. And he originally agreed to participate as a consultant to share his information. And He also had heard that this particular company was also going to secretly create their own crop circles to help promote their event. And of course, he said, don't do that. That would be bad. And he tried to dissuade them. And when these circles appeared, circles, pictograms, what have you, he reached out to the circle makers because at the time, Colin was in the States. And he's like, do I need to fly all the way back so that I can study this gray alien in the crop circle? And basically, he was told, no, that's okay. You no need to come out. So pretty much we determined that to promote the movie Signs, Touchstone Pictures, which is a subsidiary of the Disney Corporation, had basically created this buildup where all these different pictograms appeared right around the release of the movie Signs, which was a really fascinating thing to learn during my research.
And that the message was something about beware those who lie or something, wasn't it?
Yeah, beware the bearers of false gifts and their broken promises, much pain, but still time. Believe there is good out there. We oppose deception, conduit closing. So it was this rather ominous, kind of like a little vague warning, which fit well with their movie.
So let's talk about Operation Blackbird. That was the army involved with that one, wasn't it?
Yeah, so what I found is the most confounding about crop circles is just the overload of misinformation. And poor Colin and another science figure at the time, Colin and Pat Delgado, they were approached by the British Army, and they offered to spend a whole week with the BBC and Nippon Television from Japan, where they would set out their surveillance equipment on a hillside where crop circles were notorious for appearing. And for a whole week, they would be out there nonstop monitoring all aspects of spectrograph and audio, and just, we're going to watch and study this whole thing, and we're going to either catch some human in the act, or we're going to get the real deal happening finally on camera. And nothing happened the first night, but by the second night, the army began to notice something in the field, and they, before the sun rose, they gave Colin a call and basically pressed upon him, this is it, we got it. You know, we've detected these orange lights in the field. Please come out, and you got to verify this is what it really is. So before he had even arrived and the sun was completely up over the field, Colin was on camera basically saying, yeah, sounds like we have the real deal. And then as the sun came up, it quickly became obvious that they had been hoaxed. There was a astrology kind of game board that was left in a couple of the circles as a thumb in the nose of the team that was out there. So the travesty of this whole thing was, of course, Pat Delgado and Colin Andrews was embarrassed on national television. But if you really stop and think about it, do you honestly believe that with all of their surveillance equipment, that a bunch of guys were able to sneak past the army and create this field without being noticed?
So it was kind of like the army was involved. They might have even made the circles.
It seemed like it was pretty obvious that poor Colin and Pat were set up by the military to take this fall on camera.
Do you ever talk to farmers? Did they get quite annoyed that these circles were being made in their fields?
Oh, most definitely. While I was visiting, I approached some farmers, and they had one word for it, and that was vandalism.
And wasn't there one where people came out to look at a circle and the farmer turned up on his tractor and quickly flattened it?
Oh, that one was definitely one of the more fascinating, awe-inspiring ones. Only existed maybe for a couple hours. So it was called The Basket. And this one was the first ever woven pattern crop circle. So while most crop circles are flattened down in a general sweep in a circle, this one was constructed with multiple circles inside of one major circle, each one where the, instead of just a regular flat sweep of wheat, the wheat was laid into a basket woven pattern. Now, I'm not saying it was actually interwoven. There was a particular lay of the wheat where one would go one direction and then two in a counter-opposed direction. But it was just a stunning, awe-inspiring. If I were to give a level of complexity for something like this on a scale of 1 to 10, it would be a 10. And horrifically, this particular landowner despised the whole crop circle phenomena. And that morning around 6 a.m. when it was discovered, Mr. Mueller was on hand, where he began to document with his cameras. And within a very short period of time, the farmer happened to notice that they were observing something. And he quickly came out, shooed them off the land, and brought in a tractor to harvest the whole thing before too much of it could be made. But some photographs did survive, and it was quite an inspiring thing. The interesting aspect about that particular crop circle, though, was, like I said, the complexity of it was like a 10. And yet it was also the very first crop circle that was woven like that. Now, since then, there have been several crop circles that have emulated this pattern, but I would characterize them as more like a level of 3, 4, 5, and 6 of weaving. So that does call into question, you know, normally when humans create new works of art, they start at your 3s, 4s, and they work their way up to a 10. You never hear about someone creating a masterpiece and then nothing for a while, and then others just trying to somehow get somewhere close to it. So I did find that aspect of it quite interesting.
Yeah, and that was in Holland. It wasn't in the UK.
It was a Dutch researcher that discovered it in the UK.
Ah, okay. I wanted to go back to Dr. Levengood left some crop samples in a box without water or light, but they stayed alive and they were thriving, and the control plants had died.
Yes, he had left some of his exposed, potentially exposed NHI crop samples in a box in the dark for like 2 weeks. And next to it was the control samples. And when he went back in after remembering they were there, he opened them up and the control samples were completely withered and dead, while the other previously exposed samples that were the interesting ones were still quite healthy. So from that, he began to figure out what is it about these particular, what exposed these things in order to keep them so healthy and hardy for this length of period of time. And from that, he created a patented process where he could, it was described as an electron avalanche that was basically poured over these crops, and it somehow made them extra hardy.
So that would make the crops much better. Did lots of farmers take it up?
So that was, I was like, wow, you know, this would be such an innovative thing. He patented it, and then he took it around to all the different kind of crop providing companies to sell this patent and say, this is a great way to increase your harvest by like 30% or so. The sad part was, is at that same time, there was so much genetic research going on with, what do you call them, GMO, that they were getting similar results just through genetic research. And it also helped. They would rather sell seeds that they could genetically modify versus his electron avalanche.
So have you found, or has anybody found, that when a crop circle's gone and then the crops are growing a year later or something, that where the circle was, the crops grow a lot better than everything around it?
Yes. It has been touted there's something that they call a crop circle ghost, where once the crop from the circle has been fully harvested in the year following, when we're going back for a planting season, you'll see this ghost of the original crop circle begin to appear in the field. And a lot of people would characterize that, oh, this must have been the evidence of the NHI, that their energy must have somehow affected the ground, and therefore it's growing back stronger and healthier in this ghost image. But actually, that's not something that the data holds up. So Francesco Grassi did some phenomenal work using the rope and board method with several of his teams that has done some just amazing work. And even his crop circles have appeared as ghost images in the following years, just with the simple crop and board method, the rope and board method. So what's happening in that instance is when you flatten the ground and you put pressure on the earth, that it strengthens that soil in that particular region so that early growth actually happens more rapidly there. So you're going to get like this outgrowth of weeds and what have you coming out of the ground before it's tilled for the harvest.
And is there a circle that you saw or you researched that stands out to you as most likely not man-made?
So yes. And I don't mean to discourage anyone of your listeners. I like to present the data, and everyone should be able to make your own determinations. Please check out the guidebook and see for yourself some of these amazing things. So there was the Golden Hill rapeseed crop, where it was a field of canola that was growing. And what was amazing about it was this particular crop circle was kind of in a sunflower shape almost. And the thing about canola is if you attempt to try and flatten it too early or too late, it doesn't crush the way you expect. And a lot of times the stalks will break like celery. So the amazing thing about this particular crop circle was with canola, you have these beautiful blooming yellow flowers that appear all over. Now, when this one particular crop circle was created, you could see how clearly delineated the shape was, and all of these beautiful flowers were still laid out in the flattened portions where the petals were not damaged. It was completely pressed down, and they still were as healthy as ever. So what was amazing about that is about 10 years later, the TV show, I believe it was Ancient Aliens, came along and they hired the Circle Maker team to recreate this exact same crop circle. And their team went out there with the ropes and boards and they completely created slightly different scale to the original one, but identical in appearance. And the distinctive thing about it, though, is from the air, they looked identical. But when you got down on the ground, you looked at it, those plants were trashed. All of the flowers were wrecked. It was definitely not something that a rope and board could recreate.
That's fascinating, isn't it? This indication that the flowers were still intact.
There was also another crop circle where, if you think about it, when you're using the rope and board technique, you're flattening a field of wheat or barley or what have you with this board and your whole body weight. So you're pressing down on this board and it's flattening out the crop as you step over it. But how would that explain a crop circle where all of the stalks are only flattened at about halfway up the stem? So there have been a few of these crop circles that actually appear to almost be like a vinyl album where there's like grooves and divots, but they're not completely flattened to the ground.
So there was a time in the Netherlands, I think there was a really big crop circle made. There were many circles, and I think they were getting smaller as they went away from the center, and they counted 8 circles on one of the arms.
Yeah, so there was in the Netherlands in 2001, this particular crop circle that was somewhat reminiscent of a scorpion pattern, had this little arching tail on the end of the crop circle. And the research team went out and they documented it 1 week where they saw all the circles. And then something inspired them to come back the following week and double check their work. And while they were there redocumenting with their cameras, they took their photos, they were getting ready to leave. And as they were starting to exit, one of the researchers noticed there was 8 circles forming the tail when they got there. But now that they were leaving, there were 9 circles. So an added circle was created while they were present that was about 4 feet in diameter. They went back and they examined it. They felt that the circle, like they lowered their hands to it and they could tell that the atmosphere around it was warm. And then they started to notice that their cell phones were losing power and their camera batteries were all dropping down to zero. They got a sense that something was, that the circle was not ready and it wasn't the best idea for them to be present at that moment. And so they vacated the field. And once they got home, their batteries actually returned back to regular levels.
So is this some kind of EM influence there that's happening?
Yes. Most likely it's a form of microwave energy. Like I was mentioning before, how something was able to microwave the field while they were present without them seeing it happening, I couldn't tell you. And of course we have to take these gentlemen's, on their word of what occurred with them.
You mentioned the circle makers a little while ago. They're a group, obviously, that makes circles, but there was hints that they were linked to MI5.
Oh, yes. Those gents definitely, they got a kick and a charge out of that, honestly. So these were some guys that just came out of college, and with one of them was in an art program, and he's gone on to do some successful documentaries, I will add, that were interesting and adjacent. But yeah, they drafted up the Circle Maker website. And of course, if you want to help build up the mystique around your subject, why not put into your code some little links that connect to MI5? Have some fun with it, man. But one interesting aspect I will note is the lead Circle Maker went on to be the director on a documentary called Mirage Men, where they documented the kind of misinformation that the government built up around UFOs.
You also mentioned the Guerrilla Skeptics, and they're a group that are on Wikipedia. They don't seem like very nice people to me. What's your view of them?
So yeah, if you talk to anyone in the ufology field who happens to have a Wikipedia page, you will discover that there's a lot of information about these individuals that the Guerrilla Skeptics will go in and they will modify and put factually untrue information about them. And any attempts to try and correct it will go unanswered. And they will resort to different kinds of, internet tactics to get their way, it would seem.
So they're very much skeptical and materialist, and they edit anything really on Wikipedia that's paranormal to make it look like nonsense and pseudoscience and that kind of thing.
Yes, exactly. That's their basic goal. Is the Guerrilla Skeptics have their agenda where there is a set, closed-minded, this is the way the science is, and anything that diverges from what is mainstream, they will guerrilla tactic their way into making sure that that information is what they purport it to be. They get to decide as the arbiters of what is true. Now, if you ask Louis Elizondo about his Wikipedia page, he could probably cite all sorts of things on there that were not correct. But at some point, you have to give up because they're just going to keep changing the page until they get what they want.
So with the Circle Makers, would you say they were also very skeptical and debunkers of UFOs?
Well, one interesting, on Facebook, there is the official Circle Makers group. And if you go on there, you will meet many of these interesting people who basically purport that all crop circles are man-made. And you're never going to convince any other argument than that.
And do the Circle Makers ever do this for money, like some kind of advertising or something?
Oh, yeah. There's been some amazing stuff done for... my favorite was the Oreo cookie commercial where, you know, the aliens came down and they ran off with the Oreo cookies and they left behind a giant Oreo in the field.
Do you find that there's been a lot of crop circles, like thousands and thousands across history, or is it really not so much and they've just become famous?
Well, because of it really hit the zeitgeist in the 90s and what have you in the 2000s in England. And there was a definite glomming on where other people like, hey, I could do that. And actually, if you look in the guidebook, I have a whole chapter on how you can do one yourself. But I want to say that if you're really interested in trying to distinguish between man-made and not man-made, you could put together a potential organization of science figures with a team where they could go out and study the crop circles. I would honestly avoid the United Kingdom if you're looking to actually do hard research, because the likelihood of weeding out the man-made ones is more difficult in those locations. Instead, I would focus on the other countries where they're not as common. Or continents, like even Africa. There's been some reported there, though not as many.
So it's been fascinating talking to you. The book's called UFO Science, Crop Circle Casework. And where can people get it?
Oh, that one's been distributed worldwide. You can get it at any bookstore. You would need to order it online. You won't be able to walk into your retail store. So if you go to Barnes & Noble or Apple Books, Google Books, and of course, Amazon, any one of those, it's available in paperback and ebook, and also hardback on Amazon. I will say the hardback book on Amazon has a much higher quality paper to it so that the photograph images are much sharper.
And do you have a website?
It is G.O. Turner Writes. With a W, writes.com.
Fantastic. And thanks again for coming on the podcast.
Oh, Simon, I've enjoyed this immensely. Thank you so much for inviting me back again.
And that was an interview with G.O. Turner about his book, UFO Science, Crop Circle Casework. A great way to support the podcast is to sign up to Patreon, where you can get exclusive access to the extended version of this episode. Just go to patreon.com/alienufopodcast. When you sign up, you get access to the episodes in the back catalogue, and they are ad-free and are released 2 days before the free versions. And if you want to try out the extended episodes, you can now get a 7-day free trial. My website is pastliveshypnosis.co.uk, and the link is in the show notes. And if you enjoy the podcast, please leave a review, and be sure to subscribe on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or via your favourite podcast app to make sure that you don't miss out on any episodes.